Welcome, Irish Illustrated Insider listeners. Tim Priester with Tim O'Malley from Irish Illustrated, Pete Sampson of The Athletic, and John Bryce of Football Scoop and Irish Illustrated. We are, it's April 15th, and Notre Dame is down to 12, 13, 14, 15, four practices, three this week, and then, of course, the Blue Gold game on Saturday. But this past Saturday, we had a real treat. The only way it would have been better is if we were able to sit out in the 68-degree weather down near the action, but we were up in the press box. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that would have been nice to get a little bit of sun down there because it was a great day in South Bend. But Notre Dame scrimmaged. I counted 77 plays, but I don't think I counted the kicks. Marcus Freeman said it was in the 80s. And it was, by and large, dominated by the defense. There were a couple series there where the quarterbacks had a little bit of success, especially C.J. Carr. But by and large, it was defense dominated. I wrote a story this morning, and I realized it's kind of after the fact. We should have been saying on Thursday, hey, man, defense is going to dominate this scrimmage. But look, it's a spring, veteran defense, Al Golden, third year, new offensive line. It transpired pretty much the way you would expect with a new offensive line and a defense that that's going to be really, really darn good this year.
Yeah, at some point, I'm trying to do my film review without film for X Things to Say. And at some point, it was like 25-23 offense in segment 7 or 8. I'm like, no, it's not. They're not ahead. They were never ahead in this game, in my opinion. I think the defense just outplayed the offense. The offense did some better things than I think we were able to get across at first blush when we finished, because we, of course, lauded Jaden Mickey and Xavier Watts and Traore and Shuler and all the guys that make big plays. But I thought the offense did do a little better when I kind of go through a look at my notes. But yeah, the defense is ahead. They should be ahead. And they have more depth too. And it's usually the case though at Notre Dame the last 7 years, that backup defense is going to play better in these situations than a backup offensive line. I think
because they get more playing time. I use the word dominate, and that's probably a little strong. There was more offensive success. I want to take that word back. Yeah. There was more offensive success than being able to say dominated, because there were a couple touchdown drives in there, and CJ Carr did look good, and Angeli did connect with Greathouse a couple times. You know, I don't know that the running game was very strong. It was mainly the edge pass protection, right, Jen?
Yeah. I counted at least 5 sacks on Saturday, and I may be one or two short in that regard. But I know, I believe Bubakar had one. Junior Tuialamaka had a TFL very, very early in the scrimmage setting. Jalen Sneed had a sack, I believe. Riley Mills had one that would have been counted a sack with some pressure in the middle.
Jordan Clark had one.
Jordan Clark had one.
Sevilano had one.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you mention Vitello yet? Like Vitello, yeah. I think, had one.
Yeah. So you're right. I mean, the defense was far ahead. When you look out there and see the guys that were ostensibly on the second team defense in Saturday's scrimmage, there were many spots there where players have already played, had significant collegiate experience, where you couldn't really say that, certainly couldn't say that at all about the second team Notre Dame offensive line from Saturday's scrimmage. There were some flashes. I think there were enough moments from the offense where you say, okay, they can build on that. That was something to hold on to. That was something to take note of, particularly at the wide receiver position, but overall definitely a defensive led day.
I think dominated is a completely fine word, because I thought that even if those weren't pick sixes, the defense still won. But they scored on top of that twice. So that's fine. I think for context sake, in 20 plus years of doing this, I've never seen a good second team offensive line. It's never. It just never happened. So the fact that it didn't happen on Saturday is not really a surprise, nor is it a huge source of concern. Yeah, I think, you know, CJ Carr was outstanding, and, you know, a guy that I've been, I think, skeptical of more than you guys have has been Jalen Sneed, and that was the best I've ever seen him play by far. It was like, okay, I can see what you guys have been talking about on previous podcasts or what the coaches had to say during spring practice. It's like, I get it. There's something there that can happen, even if it's not an every down linebacker type of thing.
As a former high school coach, body language, you guys have heard me say this many times through the years, body language is huge. Jalen Snead's body language is awesome now. I mean, he's absolutely, totally dialed in, and it's a great thing. And I want to say that as it relates to the offense, and look, we've all been talking about, hey, you know, Steve Angeli, if he had to start, he would probably do pretty well. But the fact of the matter is, the guy that's a projected starting quarterback this fall is Riley Leonard, and he was hurt. All he was doing was, I thought it was kind of neat, he was shadowing the plays of the first team. And Tim, is that right? On the pick six by Mickey, when Leonard was shadowing the play, he read that and turned to the other side.
Yeah, he turned to the boundary. I had an indie source tell me he had just started the film, but Leonard simulated the whole game behind center and with a helmet on, which I thought was fun too. And he threw right when Angeli threw left for the pick six. So I thought they saw that on the film. And I think that's an interesting dynamic. I think it's really cool that Riley Leonard did that. That's not for show when you go out there with your helmet on and simulate an entire game instead of just watching and giving high fives to the quarterbacks after good plays. He went out there and tried to play a football game.
Well, it helps that he's mobile enough with his the protective device that he has on, because Marcus Freeman said after the game that he's run 7-on-7. So he's physically in a position physically to do that. I would hope that the starting quarterback or any quarterback, a veteran like him, would want to go ahead and do that. But guys, receivers flashed, obviously. There's a question in the second segment about that. It was good to see Eli Raridan actually running around and taking plays. It was good to see Notre Dame's starting defensive tackles do something this spring. We haven't seen anything all spring, which I think is a really smart thing with veterans like that. And you probably should do it a little bit more with other guys.
I think that's been pretty I mean, Brian Kelly would do this too. It's once you're in your fourth or fifth year, spring practice, it's not for you. You don't need it. There's enough that you want to save the tread on the tire and you want to give younger guys a chance to compete. So it's, I think that's pretty typical, and it's smart to do it that way.
Yeah, and I would echo that. Even for a guy who doesn't have that much experience, I think the way that this staff has managed Eli Raridan throughout the spring has been really smart. And we did see enough out of Eli on Saturday to see him flash to make a third down catch and turn it into a first down, where he had to get upfield a couple of yards extra and to be in on some blocking plays and to have eased his way in. He didn't start with the quote unquote first team offense on Saturday, but then as the scrimmage evolved and wore on, Eli Raridan was out there with some of the first team offense and again, integrating himself into a much bigger component role of the offense.
That was great news and surprising, because you just figure, that means that he is getting some more time than we thought. You could easily sit him out of that, but maybe sit him out of the blue goal game now.
I wonder about that.
I would. He's just too important to the equation for something to happen in one practice. We don't know what he'll do, all week. But guys, we talked about this last week about the linebackers. When we were talking about Snead, we also praised, Osbury and Viliamuasa and Bowen and Kaiser's a given. Man, L. Golden is going to take full advantage of that linebacking core getting after the quarterback. We tend to worry a lot about defensive ends for good reason. You want a pass rush out of four-man rush, no doubt about it. But when you have a linebacker core like that, you can do a lot with it in the running game and in the pass rush game.
You make a great point about the defensive ends, though, but like just this game, and part of it is communication issues and being unblocked. The defensive ends were great, but the offensive tackles were then bad. So I don't know how you want to look at it. I had to ask Freeman that question. I'm not even sure I got it out right, but I was like, how do you evaluate the fact that the defensive ends were coming free? Is it hard because you're mismatching quarterbacks and lines? He's like, no, we evaluate it like they didn't do the right thing. Those guys, they might not be out there, but they didn't do the right thing right now.
I think that's just the result of they do not know where the blitzers are coming from. And so they're trying to compensate. The left tackle is trying to compensate for two or three defenders, and they don't know what's coming next. That's L. Golden's defense, and Golden does not hold back. I think there are probably times in practice where he's probably instructed to hold back a little bit so that the offense can be a little bit more productive. But this, and maybe our instant analysis reflected it because it's so fresh and we're talking about it, but this overreaction on the Irish Illustrated message board about the offensive line. I just think that it's a massive overreaction. I get it on the surface, but Pete, like you said, especially with second team offensive lines, those are never cohesive. And frankly, the first team offensive lines generally aren't either in the spring, almost regardless of where the defense is.
Yeah, the offensive line is a concern. This is the first question, so I won't get too deep into it. I think the coaches share that opinion too. So
I agree.
Is it a disaster position? No. But it's a weakness of the team, I think for Notre Dame in particular, it's kind of hard to get your head around how Notre Dame could have the offensive line be a weakness of the team just based on how good the offensive lines have been here. But that's just a situation that they're dealing with. Every team has a weakness, and right now that's Notre Dame's.
I don't think, I don't disagree with that, which is kind of contradictory to, I guess, to what I just said. I'm just talking about cohesion and playing as a unit and those kind of things, because I don't see a major problem on the interior offensive line. It's still inexperienced other than Pat Coogan, and a lot of people are clamoring for him to be replaced. I thought he played, like I said, I did not look at the left guard on every snap because I would have missed too much. But when I did, I thought he held up well, and I thought Spindler maybe struggled a little bit. And Spindler's not full go 100%. You got to judge him in come August. I think Billy Strauss is going to be great. I don't see a major concern on the interior other than Coogan's probably got to get a little bit more pop. And then the edge guys just have to prove themselves.
I wrote down ones versus ones for the Jeremiah Love run where he bundled a Don Shuler.
Yeah.
He would have gone over Coogan and Jagasa unless I messed up and didn't see Spindler come in for that. But the left side of the line had a really nice push. That was one of the better holes made, and obviously one of the more exciting runs.
Yeah. And also, as we noted, I believe the only time they were in 12 personnel was when the offense was pinned against its own goal line at the three, and they did push out for the first down. They got enough push on first and second down runs, and then had a short pass, I believe, on third and two or three to Flanagan to move the sticks and keep that possession alive, give them some breathing room out against their own end zone and be able to more fully operate the offense. So there were moments where you saw the offensive line generate some push, do some nice things, and keep the quarterbacks upright. It was just very glaring when there were the edge breakdowns that there were, because there was a snap early in the game that if it's a live game other than a scrimmage, they're calling in paramedics for the quarterback because he was dead. I can't remember if that was Snead or Clark off the edge that really would have, could have hospitalized somebody had it not been a scrimmage set.
Yeah, and that, I want to come to the offensive line's defense a little bit. There was one, it was Minchie in particular. Like, it's on the quarterback to figure out where that's coming from and get
rid
of the ball.
That's why I was asking Marcus.
The quarterbacks did not do a good job of that in some big moments. So there's a growth opportunity there that is necessary, probably more for the younger quarterbacks than, Angeli or Leonard, obviously. But Golden got the offense in some situations where not only did the offensive line not know where the pressure was coming from, the quarterback didn't account for it either.
Yeah.
Two seconds on Bryce's point, we should point out for the listeners, that was one versus one, too, when the guards got pushes and Ashton Craig got a push. That was against the first unit where they got out from the shadow of their own goal line.
Yeah.
And that's a stout interior defensive line getting pushed again. So that's good. I want to say great for Jaden Mickey. Jaden Mickey has had a real battle, a real tough time his first couple years in the program, hasn't lived up to the expectations on the field, dealt with his mother's illness and passing. So it's been a rough go for Jaden Mickey at Notre Dame his first couple years. So my first reaction when I saw that he stepped in, it was absolutely gone. It was like, good for Jaden Mickey, because he needed that, and he's in a battle to try to win a starting job. And so good for him. And whether he starts or Christian Gray starts ahead of him or whatever. You don't get through a whole season with two cornerbacks, especially Ben Morrison coming off of the shoulder surgery. He was pretty excited out there with that sling on, jumping around, celebrating on those
picks. Yeah, he was. That was
Mickey's pick six was the worst part of being upstairs, because we would have been sitting right in front of it, and we would have heard all 75 yards of that.
Well, no doubt. And it was like, were their windows open?
Always have them open during games.
But you could hear throughout the scrimmage,
The
enthusiasm of probably the defense on our side of the field? It was an enthusiastic scrimmage, and so that was good. It was just a great day in Notre Dame Stadium. I wish we could have been a little bit closer to the action, but we do, Notre Dame, very much appreciate the opportunity to watch it from the press box, because that's huge. Because as you said, Tim, we heard about that last year, and it was like 90 some plays I think they ran, and it came down to the last play.
Yeah, well, this one kind of did. I think they could have won before Shuler picked that off. Yeah. I don't care. Would have won the offense.
Well, the fact that the offense was winning, the scoring must be heavily loaded in favor of the offense. And I don't know if they adjusted the rules thinking that the defense would be that far ahead, but I don't know. Guys, wrapping up segment one, anything else you want to throw in?
CJ Carr was good.
CJ Carr was excellent. Well, we'll talk about him more in the second segment, but he just seemed very poised. I don't know how to his throws are just, they're just beautiful. They are aesthetically beautiful coming off the hand while they're in midair, and then they seem very catchable on the back end of it.
So between the breaks here, I'm going to compile a list of best practice performances by freshmen or early enrollee quarterbacks that I've seen in 23 years, and I'll get back to you on the other side of this.
He throws like Jimmy Clausen, only his teammates don't want to punch him.
Yeah, you know, and Clausen was like,
Clausen threw a beautiful ball.
No, he threw a tremendously beautiful football, especially his last year at Notre Dame. But Clausen got the crap beat out of him his freshman year because he wasn't strong enough, and he had a very poor offensive line in front of him. I don't think CJ Carr is probably strong enough to withstand a whole season, but he too throws an excellent football. There's just no denying that. We come up, we gushed about him after the game, and it was warranted.
He did fumble. I don't think anyone knows that.
He fumbled
in the middle of his last series. He was
with bounced right back up to him though, right?
Bounced right back to him. Of course,
he even fumbles beautifully.
He walks on water, man. No, but he fumbled. It was twos versus twos. He came back in. He fumbled. It was Snead got in there, was picked up, but Donovan Heinisch got the sack and did the gritty, and the ball bounced right back to him. And they took him out and put in Minchie for the rest of the series. So like there was one freshman moment for the high school senior playing against Notre Dame's.
And that was also when it looked like a jailbreak from the Notre Dame defense. I mean, it was Red Rover. Let everybody come on.
Segment two coming up, burning up the boards.
Welcome back to segment two, burning up the boards. Our first question, Irish from A2, are you still confident in Notre Dame's playoff chances after watching the offensive line on Saturday?
Well, after watching Saturday, no, you wouldn't come away really confident. But I think the reality is that, yes, I still think that this is very much a playoff team. I'm not saying it won't come into play. Certainly Charles Jagasa is going to have to work his butt off between now and the start of the season to really make himself a left tackle. As many know, I don't think that's the natural position for him, but he's the best man. He's the best candidate for the job on the roster. Yeah. I think from guard to guard, they're going to be fine. I think Tosh Baker has a chance to be fine. Those are tough positions, man. The edge is a tough position. Notre Dame faces some teams this year. I know, you know, LSU's pass rush with Gelati is going to be a handful, and they're going to have to be better. But do I think that Notre Dame's – I still absolutely believe that Notre Dame's a playoff team with this offensive line.
Yeah, I mean, Louisville with Eston Gelati is one where you're like, okay, maybe that will be could be tough sledding for Notre Dame. I didn't come out of Saturday with a Notre Dame is more or less likely to make the playoffs because of the offensive line. I do think once they get there, assuming they're not playing like Tulane, you know, in the first round, that's where I could see Notre Dame really having some trouble. But that's what, 6 months away, and a lot of games from now. So Notre Dame's offensive line probably will look a lot different in December than it does today.
That would be 8 months, Pete. And I'm mathematically challenged, but yes. we're just in April and December.
I've been on vacation for 3 weeks, Bryce. Give me a break.
3 weeks.
Fine. He's lost all track of time.
Yeah. I crossed the international dateline.
We put a 24-hour rule on your 25-hour jet lag. Yeah. So get out of here. I don't feel a diminishment in my belief that Notre Dame should be a playoff team or can be a playoff team after Saturday, because while we don't get the benefit of film review like the coaches do, we all, I think, took pretty detailed notes, and we can go back and see, like we've already talked about in this podcast, what that group did very well coming off of its own goal line, what it did do well with the running backs and pass pro, the fact that CJ Carr, Steve Angeli, and Kenny Minchie all had really nice throws, the fact that Notre Dame has better wideouts and has finally overcome the Dell Alexander not recruiting wideouts debacle to a certain extent, and the fact that we saw all of that without seeing the guy that's going to be Notre Dame's starting quarterback in the fall. So I can't sit here and say Notre Dame has a worse chance or I believe Notre Dame is in worse shape to make the playoffs when we did see offensive growth and development even without the first team quarterback out there.
I have an extremely quick answer to this because I wanted to say it on instant analysis. I wrote down untouched so many times. That is a communication issue that will be cleared up in August with Riley Leonard and your starting tackles.
Yeah, and I bet it gets cleared up a bunch this week.
I think it gets cleared up a bunch this week
because the coaches now have back-to-back Saturdays of scrimmage, but particularly the Jersey scrimmage to go back and look at 77 offensive snaps and see where those communication breakdowns were. Now, I saw one of those silly lists over the weekend that said maybe Marcus Freeman is the coach who enters this season with the fourth most pressure on him. And I will continue to say there's extreme pressure on that opening game, August 31st in College Station.
And I just want to add, you know, Mike Denbrock is the offensive coordinator. I if an offensive line is struggling, you go quick game, you go three-step drops, you get the ball out. I think you're going to see with this offense that they won't just keep pound, 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 pound. There are ways to help offset if an offensive line's struggling a little bit, and that's to get the football outside the hash. I want to add something that has nothing to do with this, but I just want to give credit to Pete Sampson. A long time ago, Pete Sampson was the first one after a practice to tweet, these were the players that stood out. Have you seen what everybody in our industry is doing now? There must have been half a dozen of them doing exactly what Pete Sampson has been doing for years. So just wanted to call that out. Question from Maltese Irish. Tim O'Malley, what level of production do you need to see from Christian Gray this fall to finally accept and embrace his jersey number? I just
want the guy to be able to market himself and look cool in the age of NIL and 21 or number
He's
one.
Making
be great.
It cool.
What's that?
He's making the number cool.
He can make Impossible. The number cool. It's like Jaden Greathouse can make 19 cool if he's good enough. So I would say I will accept the number if he supplants Xavier Watts winning the Nagurski Award this year.
He's completely limiting himself. He's hurting the team by being 29.
See, right, I'm not alone on this one.
Couple questions here to tag together. Denver Maximus, how refreshing was it to see a wide receiver rotation that not only included able bodies, but a room that is bustling with talent? And then from DMB346, sounds like Cam Williams had an impressive day. Do you think that portends a quicker path to the field than expected?
I think, well, the first part, it's great to see wide receiver rotation because it didn't even include Jaden Harrison or Bo Collins, who will be in the wide receiver rotation.
And it didn't include Jaden Thomas.
And it didn't include Jordan Faison.
Yes.
So and Logan Salvate.
They could put a whole new starting group out there, actually, if they felt like it. So they have a much better receiving unit. It's going to be the second part. The only reason I don't think it portends do it is because I can still name seven guys. They're going to be ahead of Cam Williams, and that doesn't include KK Smith. But I liked seeing what Cam Williams did. And if you mean quicker path to the field, that he will be involved and he'll get his four games where there's they totally trust him. He's a varsity player. Yes, I definitely see a quicker path to the field.
Go ahead, JB.
I was just going to say, first of all, hopefully the DMB 346, I hope that's an homage to Dave Matthews Band. So that's where I'm going with this user asking that question. I'm going to go with you being a DMB fan. Saw them last month in Vegas. I thought Cam Williams played Saturday like a guy that will get four games and a postseason chance or will get a chance to maximize his playing opportunities before being discussed for a red shirt in the fall. Cam's body has gotten better since he got here. He's another one that has added some good muscle, but still looks explosive. He had a really good practice here recently. We watched him in the open portion where he was fluid through the drills, was catching the ball really well, and drew some praise that day from Mike Brown. And Saturday was just a continuation of that. And consider last year, if you'd had Jaden Thomas out and some of these other guys who were out or didn't play, Jordan Faison not active in the scrimmage, consider how debilitating that would have been. And yet we've all talked about how the wide receivers made plays Saturday and flashed.
Yeah, I would say on Cam Williams, like, can he crash into the crowded streets of Notre Dame's receiver room? Let's say he was number six. I went back the previous 10 years. How many snaps did the sixth wide receiver play in their stats? They averaged 96 snaps per game per season, 5.5 catches for the year, 80 total yards, 1 touchdown. Can Cam Williams do that? Absolutely. But that would be being number six, which means he's still going to be
number seven this year, right?
Yeah, he's going to have to beat out some guys to be number six. What we saw on Saturday was really encouraging. I think it removes, I mean, look, we've covered a lot of big time receivers come in and they don't do anything their freshman year. And then they never do anything ever. Cam Williams already did something in a practice that we didn't see from Jordan Johnson, for example. So I would be encouraged if I was Notre Dame that Cam Williams did what he did.
Go ahead, TJP. I was going to just add one thing.
Well, one practice doesn't make a career or an entire spring. I thought it was great what he did. That's fantastic. Yeah. But I think the coaching staff still sees Micah Gilbert ahead of him in terms of progress. KK Smith, I know we have a tendency, we see those, Notre Dame puts out a film clip and it's a great catch. And it's all like, hey, KK Smith's having a great spring. KK Smith, though, has turned heads a little bit this spring. So that's a good thing. It's just a really, really crowded house. Yes, Denver Maximus, it is great to see a rotation. And as we all chipped in here, Jane Harrison, Jordan Faison,
Thomas,
Bo Collins, Logan Saldate, not even in the equation yet. So plenty from which to choose. And it's really great. And it's encouraging to see Cam Williams. But good stat there, Pete Sampson, because I don't think that he's going to make the top six. And even if he was sixth, it wouldn't be huge numbers, but looks real promising there.
Dallas Irish 83. Have you seen enough of Jordan Clark to assess whether he's a capable replacement for Harper and Bracey at the nickel position?
I think I've seen enough. Okay. The question says whether he's a quote capable replacement. I've seen enough to say he's a capable replacement. We haven't seen enough to say that he's Thomas Harper or Tariq Bracey, but real promising. I am really, really happy to see the Jordan Clark I've seen on the spring practice field, because I hadn't seen that in the Arizona State film. And he's definitely a capable replacement. For me personally, I have to see more to put him in the category of the other two, but I'm pretty confident that he will be.
I think one way to illustrate how I feel about him, yes, he's capable. Number two, Thomas Harper in our postseason countdown by Priester and I finished in the top 10, I believe number 10 of all football players on the team. Tariq Bracey finished in the top 8 of all football players on the team the year before. I don't think Jordan Clark is finishing the top 10 this year. However, that is because we can actually include offensive players that aren't named Joe Ault or Audric Estime in our final countdowns these next 2 years, because we didn't have it the last 2 years.
I liked what I saw from Jordan Clark. He just looked like he fit with what Notre Dame was trying to do. He looked like he understand what he, you know, his role was. You know, is he going to be as good as Thomas Harper? Maybe. That'd be great if he was. I think it's more than reasonable for him to be as good, if not a tick better. So I think if I was Notre Dame, I would feel pretty good about where I was at nickel right now, better than I did a month ago.
Yeah, I would say we've seen enough, or certainly I've seen enough to deem him a capable replacement for either of those two guys mentioned. And I think we've seen increasingly more the last couple of weeks that lead you to believe he can perform at that same level, if not potentially a little bit more. I like the physicality that we're increasingly seeing out of him. And also, let's face facts. Clarence Lewis left 2 weeks into spring camp because the writing was on the wall with Jordan Clark. If he was not separating himself and creating separation at that position, then you would think Clarence Lewis would have battled out the rest of the spring to see if he could make that a true 50-50 split or more. But it wasn't going to be. Jordan Clark has taken control of that. And like I mentioned last week, maybe on the pod or instant analysis, as someone on campus told me, good addition to our program. So when you have people on campus already saying that before spring was over, before the jersey scrimmage, I think that's significant.
I think we're all confident that he's a very good fit for Notre Dame, which is always important. I want to point out the story written by Irish Illustrated's Drew Mentock late in the week, a really nice feature on Ryan Clark or on Jordan Clark, but he spoke to his father, Ryan Clark. And this is what we suspected. Ryan Clark, you know, said, man, if you're going to play this year at Arizona State in 2023, you're going to put out a lot of bad tape because you're injured. But it was that important to Jordan Clark to fight through that. So Irish Illustrated subscribers, check that out from last week. I want to insert a question here, guys, from Joe Willie 12. And that is this: if Notre Dame dips into the portal post spring, what positions do you think they would address?
I would think they would certainly look to offensive line. I mean, I still think that they would very much love the opportunity to sign a free agent offensive tackle. Then I think tight end. And I also still think they would be willing to entertain one additional piece in the secondary, whether that was a safety or a corner. I think you could debate. I've heard it both ways. But to me, those would be the three priority spots, again, with the free agent offensive tackle being the number one priority if it was available.
I agree completely. Offensive tackle, tight end is because you have to understand reality, too, of guys coming back, Evans and Bauman and Raritan. If those guys are all back and healthy, you don't need the tight end. We probably want to announce that out loud, but you just can't predict them all to be healthy. The safety corner thing makes a lot of sense because they lost their backup number four safety corner. They lost their backup nickel, their backup corner, and their backup safety in one guy in Clarence Lewis. So yeah, it makes sense. You might need someone.
I would just throw in, of the players that I liked that I didn't really write much about or we haven't talked about, I think Cooper Flanagan is going to be excellent.
I agree.
Like, I do too. Like, yeah. And I mean by Notre Dame standards at tight end, not just like a good college player. So if Evans is healthy and Raritan stays healthy, and those are two big ifs, if Flanagan is your number three, that is awesome.
Oh yeah.
I would even say if Flanagan is your number two, that would be pretty good. So I think he's a guy that maybe got overshadowed a little bit on Saturday just because there were so many guys to talk about.
If you have a healthy Bauman, Evans, Raritan, and Flanagan, you've got probably the best tight end room in the country.
Bowers left, right? Yep, we're good. All right. I just want to make sure Bowers left, because then, you know, it's Bowers and the four other guys are tight end room.
But I don't think you can count on Kevin Bauman. I mean, he has suffered early season injuries time after time. But again, now you're Mike Denbrock's the offensive coordinator. So you're looking at a need that's one tight end less, you know, that what is normally your tight end group. I want to, and I agree, offensive tackle, for me, more cornerback than safety, because we haven't seen Rod Hurd. Obviously, he's going to play a lot. I think Luke Telich is in a position to be a contributor. I don't think any of us really look at Jordan Clark as a safety. He's a nickel, but you tend to list him with the safeties. And then the cornerback, I think the need is at cornerback. Moore. Now you do have Carson Hobbs and Leonard Moore coming in. And then at safety, in addition to Rod Hurd, you have Tay Johnson and Tabron Benny Powell. Not that you can count on those guys playing, but I mean, just in terms of numbers and depth. But man, the greatest need, and I don't know how you go about doing it unless you're going to grab a previous Power Five starting offensive tackle. And I don't think there's an abundance of those sitting in the portal.
I bet you one becomes available. You just got to get them and make them the fit. The portal will giveth more every spring than it has. And it started out well. We are famous Nick McLeod story. You know, it's you can get a Nick McLeod, I bet, if you really, really focus on it.
Question from Grand Rapids Irish 54. How concerned are you about the backup center? It sounds like Sam Pendleton struggled with his snaps. Can Rocco Spindler be trained to be a viable backup at center?
I think they're training Pendleton to be the backup. Yeah.
If they had a catastrophe where they needed a backup center, I think it would probably be Pat Coogan. You know, and then they go with Shrouth and Spindler. So I think they have a really good starting center, and I think they will make the backup center work, but it doesn't mean it's going to be Sam Pendleton.
No, but Pendleton has proved to have a really good work ethic. He's been approachable about training at that position. And again, we saw Joe Otting some on Saturday. Otting has had a very nice camp. They love his physicality and the way that he plays. So we saw very early in spring camp that they were repping four different guys at center, and they were all taking turns with all four quarterbacks at that time. And so I think you'll continue to see Notre Dame cross train and develop some depth there. But Otting, when Pendleton struggled a little bit on Saturday, Otting came in and appeared to do some nice things.
They like Sam Pendleton a lot as an interior offensive lineman. I think, you know, there wasn't a crowd per se, but they're in the stadium. They know people are watching. And Sam Pendleton doesn't have enough muscle memory as a snapper. You know, once he struggles on one, it gets in his head a little bit and it kind of adds up. It was fairly extreme. There's no doubt about that. But between now and August, he will snap the football about 8,000 times.
Exactly. That was my point. And Jack Freeman, who is producing this podcast, is sitting there. And we want to talk about a famous spring practice where Sam Mustipher was the worst snapper either one of us have ever seen in our entire lives. And I asked Sam Mustipher 2 years later, what was the hardest part about your transition to center? And he goes, snapping was my hardest thing because it's not an easy thing to do.
Sam Pendleton.
It's not easy to snap and block. They know how to snap. Snap and get up in your hands and block.
No. Yes. Pendleton, Pendleton, well, who knows? I mean, who knows? Because you've got young guards. So, I mean, in terms of eligibility, so who knows? But Pendleton will get it down. He's a good offensive lineman, and he'll practice that quite a bit. A good point about Coogan, Pete. And I'm not sure that, I think you just want to keep Spindler at guard and have him ready to go. Question from, I think this is a first from him, Aziliac 15. Given his strong performance throughout the spring, has CJ Carr done enough to be higher than fourth string?
Oh, wait, let me reveal my list of more impressive freshman or early enrollee quarterback performances. Okay, I've revealed it.
Yeah.
It's the best I've ever seen. Not close.
To me, and we've talked about this, and yes, Notre Dame shared the video of the touchdown pass to Cam, and it was a thing of beauty, but those video highlights don't show him flushing left and directing traffic and bringing a wide receiver back to him with his left hand, as I'm showing you here on video for everyone that pretends they're watching us while listening to the podcast.
It's like Riley Leonard, JB, they simulate our podcast while they're doing it.
Yeah, exactly. We like to believe that people listen to the podcast sitting in front of a microphone practicing what we're going to say. But when he directed that traffic and brought the wide out back down the left far sideline and then fired an absolute hose to him to convert the first down, to keep the six moving, and then moments later, in a different possession, stepped up into the pocket, sidestepped a defender to his left, and threw a perfect pass that Jack Polian, to his credit, did corral. He made it a little more difficult than it needed to be with some juggling there, and we wondered if it was if he was going to fall to the turf and have the ball pop out and it be a wasted moment of brilliance from CJ Carr. It wasn't. I don't have the depth of Notre Dame knowledge that you guys all have around the program, but that was a sensational performance from a freshman quarterback anywhere, not just at Notre Dame, especially for a guy, again, that has been here really, who's lived on campus since the second week of January.
T.O., has this spring transpired in such a way with Leonard's injury and Jelly and Minchie compete? Is there any way there's going to be a fourth string scholarship quarterback this fall?
Just going to say, I will bet anybody wanting to listen that he is not the fourth string quarterback next year, and I'll just leave it at that.
We'll likely move up to third string. But you know what I'm saying, though, right?
I mean, it has made it plausible.
It has transformed,
as opposed to absolutely ridiculous notion, is now plausible because right. Riley Leonard got hurt. And if you're smart and you're Minchie or Angeli, you want to see Riley Leonard come out there healthy in August before you could. I mean,
yeah, and
you get the hand of the keys to the kingdom again. So,
well, and you wouldn't want to have to play CJ Carr this fall by necessity, but as we've said and we'll continue to say, especially when you consider that there was no Riley Leonard on Saturday, Notre Dame finally has four scholarship quarterbacks that could go out and win NCAA football games.
Yes. And if you get past A&M with Riley Leonard and then all of a sudden CJ Carr had to start, you're not worried about CJ Carr until start number two is Purdue, right? Because it's on the road. You don't want that to be at night at Purdue. And then you really start to worry for start number 4 or 5 there when Louisville's defensive ends are coming around the corner against Carr. But yeah, I think CJ Carr moves. Okay. If all four quarterbacks stay in that make-believe world of unicorns and stuff, I think CJ Carr moves up anyway by the end of August.
That's fair. Was the question.
Yep.
Yeah.
That was the question. Hey, a quick hitter here from Hayden Adams Z. Thoughts on Marcus Burton declaring for the NBA draft? Am I wrong that it feels more likely to come back to college given his size and turnover tendencies?
I think it's exactly that. I wouldn't be surprised. I've seen other college basketball coaches do it. If they had that discussion and Micah Shrewsbury said, yeah, Marcus, put your name in there. Find out what the pros tell you that you need to work on. So I don't think there's a chance that Marcus Burton would be drafted in this year's draft. It's only a 2-round draft. I don't see Marcus Burton being one of 60 guys drafted or whatever it is, but I think there's no penalty to submitting your name and getting an evaluation. And if Micah Shrewsbury, with all of his NBA connections, particularly directly to the Celtics, can get Marcus Burton some good feedback and some good evals and tell him exactly what he needs to work on, then it can be a win-win.
I absolutely think he'll be back. And it was smart for him to put his name in. And it'd be even smarter for Micah Shrewsbury to have him put his name in, because maybe he can see the reality of his size versus the guys he's going against in the NBA.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
When I first caught a tweet about Marcus Burton, I thought, oh no, not the transfer portal.
Right.
Way, way, way better to hear that he entered his name in the NBA draft. Way better. I think he'll come back. I think it's a smart move on his part. Although I will say, he needs to get stronger, although he did a hell of a job. As much as he played and as hard as he played every game, it was amazing. He was still playing quality basketball at the end of the year. He needs to get stronger. He's a lot closer to being an NBA player than I ever thought he would be this time.
Oh my gosh, he was a fantastic player this year.
But he'll be back.
Irish Rhino, what is the percentage that one of the starters on the offensive line at Texas A&M is not currently on the roster?
We sort of addressed that with the transfer portal question moments ago. Maybe put this question in the queue and ask it the first week of May after the spring portal closes. Again, it opens tomorrow. It's open for 2 weeks. I don't think we can estimate it right now, because we don't know if Notre Dame is going to be able to get somebody from the portal. If somebody's available and Notre Dame believes it's a fit along the offensive line, Notre Dame would go after that person. But to Pete's point, there will be fierce competition. You're going to have to pay significantly if an offensive tackle with solid experience goes into the portal anytime between April 16 and April 30.
There are a lot of teams out there that have much bigger offensive line needs than Notre Dame does. And so the desperation that's going to come with that and the market forces that are going to come with that are going to be significant. I don't think it's likely Notre Dame will get somebody, just because it's hard to find somebody good enough that also wants to move this late in the game. It's not set up well I think, for Notre Dame to find somebody that can come in. And I'm not saying they can't find the I'm blanking on that, the Chris Smith. Like the equivalent of Chris Smith on the offensive line they can get, but that doesn't really solve any problems for you. You got to find like a starting level offensive lineman. Those are just really hard to come by.
One thing I should note here, when we talk about the portal being open for the next 2 weeks starting tomorrow, you could see a trickle-down effect potentially if some guys go into the portal at that position and they land at a school where then maybe a guy is a graduate and he feels like, oh, well, they brought this guy in. Now I need to go into the portal. So potentially you could see Notre Dame have an option beyond the next 2 weeks at the offensive line if a grad transfer decided to enter the portal in May or June or whenever. Once you're a graduate, you have some different timelines where you can enter the portal. But otherwise, I mean, the fiercest competition will be for offensive linemen in the transfer portal, unless there happens to be several good quarterbacks and quarterback needy teams who find a quarterback in the portal. I mean, look, Brian Kelly's first year at LSU, one of the best signees he got out of the portal was an FCS player. And the guy had been an FCS All-American, and LSU got him out of the portal, paid six figures to get him, and he went down and became a starter at LSU. So that gives you an idea of the demands at that position specifically.
So if you were to get a left tackle, Jagus moves to starting right tackle. If you were to get a right tackle, Jagus is your starting left tackle. Which is where it is now, of course. Question from Daniel Dixon. Best of seven series, 2023 Notre Dame team versus 2024 Notre Dame team, including coaching staffs and assuming health for all. Who are you taking?
I'm taking 24 overall because I like Riley Leonard, and I think he can do more for you than Sam Hartman. I think Riley Leonard is such a gifted athlete that he can do more for you. I really like Love and Price in the backfield with Payne continuing to prove to all of us that he has a meaningful role and is valued on this team. The offensive line, certainly you would miss Joe Alt. You bring Al Golden back. You have guys stepping forward on the defensive side of the ball. You still have Riley Mills and Howard Cross anchoring your middle. You have a much better total group of wideouts. I'm taking the potential of 24 over what we know about 23.
I would take overall 24. I think if they actually played, 23 might win because of the matchups of defensive linemen versus 23 versus offensive linemen on 24. But I think overall the roster is better. The coaching staff is better. It's just that one matchup would give me pause.
I think the Al Golden 24 defense would bundle the wide receivers and Sam Hartman from 2023 on the outside, and there'd be nine guys in the box for Estime. Morrison and Hart one-on-one with whoever you want to roll out there, and let's stop Estime.
Yeah, it's really a fascinating question because, again,
it is cool.
Estime, Alt, Fisher, Harper, Hart.
The problem with ND23 is their losses were like painful in Louisville and Clemson. Yeah. You know, it was just like, oh, they look so, not Ohio State, but the other two, they look so poor in those two games. It's hard to shake it.
I agree with JB's comment about Leonard. For me, it comes down to this. Mike Denbrock's your offensive coordinator, and Al Golden's in his third year as the defensive coordinator, and those four key guys on defense came back. I mean, obviously, you're not going to be able to duplicate what Joe Alt was able to do, and to a large extent, you know, Audric Estime with his style of play. But it's a good question. Best of seven series, 4-3 in favor of 2024. I don't know, but I like the 2024 team.
It'd be really weird to watch six games or seven games between football teams, though.
I will use this question and also the fact that I answered 24 to note that you have 46 million reasons right at the top of the list to believe in the 24 team, and that's because Notre Dame has approximately $46 million committed to the triumvirate of Marcus Freeman, Al Golden, and Mike Denbrock. You have all three of those guys who each now has 4 years on a deal at Notre Dame. Marcus Freeman, 4 years left on his initial six-year deal. He's got about $28 million left on that contract. You have Golden and Denbrock both at or above $2 million on four-year deals, approaching value of $9 million each. So that's $46 million that Notre Dame has committed to invest in ensuring Marcus Freeman in this program has the best chance for success at a national playoff level moving forward.
So if we just put Joe Alt on this team, no one would vote the other way, right?
I don't think it would even be close.
Yeah, I would agree. Hey, shout out to Daniel Dixon. Going to see him this weekend for the Blue Gold game. Him and his wife and his son, David. Looking forward to seeing him.
Mason Plummer. We've had him before because I thought he was the Duke guy.
Yeah.
Who will be talking about most after the Blue Gold game? CJ Carr. I'm going to answer it. CJ Carr.
Play the whole second half. Like, I don't even need to see the Blue Gold game to answer the question. It will be CJ Carr.
I'll say, well, yeah, I mean, Carr, for the sake of having a different answer, because I hate homogeneity, I'll go with the wide receivers group.
Yeah, I think we're going to, I think Jaden Greathouse will stand out again. He just continues to trend up. He now has position flexibility, and I think they'll take full advantage of that. But we got to look to the defensive side, because what we saw Saturday, past Saturday, is going to happen again to a large extent.
Yeah, actually, it might be Jalen Snead or Boubacar Traore, because people, especially on Snead, people have been so waiting for one of these moments. And what we saw Saturday, I think, leads credence to the fact that it's not been a light bulb moment for Snead this spring. It's been a light bulb spring.
Who's the best realistic choice that would help Notre Dame the most?
Like any one of the linebackers could have a massive game. I'm saying Osbury. He's going to make a pick in nickel.
Wow. He almost did last year, didn't he? What if it was like Emil Wagner?
Well, how
if that was in a good way?
Yeah, like if Emil Wagner comes in the second quarter. Oh, no, because they're going to be on different teams, yeah. Wagner and Baker.
If Emil Wagner, you're just watching him play one-on-one against Oben or Patello, and he plays well. Like, that, you know, considering how vanilla the defense, because I probably would disagree with, like, that we're going to see it again on Sunday or Saturday with the defense, because the Blue Gold game is televised. They, like, vanilla it out.
And they're splitting everybody up.
Yeah.
That makes it even harder offensively.
Yeah, that's true.
It didn't for Sam Hartman. So I could see, you know, maybe because the pressures are less exotic, the offensive line looks better than what we saw last week. Maybe. I'm trying to talk myself into it.
Well, that's a good point about, there aren't going to be as many blitzes. Well, try to stop L. Golden from blitzing.
Yeah.
I dare you.
We'll see Marcus Freeman yelling at Al Golden on the headset.
You know, it's we had the. I'm just going to say we have the typical junior jabby comment. And there's probably a lot of young listeners that don't know who the hell Junior Jabby is. What year was that, Tim? Can you pinpoint it? It was a nondescript running back who didn't get many opportunities during his career at Notre Dame, and he had a sensational spring game. So people ask that question all the time. It's become too cliche for me to include it now, but that's kind of
Stafford had five touchdowns in a spring
game. Stafford, the wide receiver, had five touchdowns in a game. Yes, absolutely. But he played more in game situations. He played more, but that's kind of what this quick question is. But I'm still point taken though, Pete, about how the defenses are run, but I'm still going to pick defense, because I think the offense is really going to sputter a lot.
I don't know why I didn't know this. Junior Jabby did that in the most heavily attended spring game in Notre Dame program history. You guys know what spring game that was?
07.
Yes, Jimmy Clausen's game.
Oh. Yes, he did. Do you remember what Jabby's, how many touchdowns did he score?
I'm looking up your final stats here.
Well, that's dead air, so I'll move on to the next question.
Good 87 yards. That's not as good as I thought.
87 yards. Well done, Theo. We're going to wrap up here with a question from NDSteve01. And it's a good question, because JB's got some info on this. Are there any updates on the new football facility, the start date for construction? Are there renderings? Sounds like we know that this is about to happen, John. Or when?
Yeah, that's I'm appreciative of that question. I normally I'm not involved in that, but I'm very glad to see that question on the list. It is imminent. Notre Dame has made tremendous progress. I should point out that Notre Dame had multiple members of its athletics department, football cabinet, so to speak, doing site tours last year. There were people from Notre Dame that went early to Clemson to tour Clemson's new football facility. The progress is real. The building is real. It's going to happen. They've had necessary conversations. It won't be called the Goog. It won't be the Goog Annex. It will have a new name. And it's coming, for those who have been asking, it's coming very, very soon. We'll leave it at that. But I do anticipate us having more TP. You've had a lot of good research on it, and you've been digging on that. I would expect us to have more later in the week, be it at Irish Illustrated or Football Scoop. But it's real. There's a lot of progress, and it's coming much, much sooner than later.
So we have a elongated window of good weather coming up in South Bend. You're saying it's going to fall into those parameters.
It's happening real, real soon.
Wait a second. This Junior Jabby thing has taken root. Junior, do you want to hear the recap of this game?
We're still on that question? Yeah, let's hear
it. It was 10-6. He had 87 yards. It's just because everybody else couldn't run the ball. Demetrius Jones went 3-for-6 with an ugly 15-yard touchdown pass to Robbie Paris. That's according to Notre Dame's website.
Wow.
David Bruton had an interception. Clausen was 3-for-7, proving Pete's point that C.J. Carr is going to be the best early and early quarterback after the Blue Gold game. Zach Frazier, I will give you guys the stats for the game. He did transfer afterwards. 0-for-4 with one pick. Also, Zach Frazier's 1-0 at Notre Dame as a starter. Wanted to point out.
Yep.
Happy left. Charlie Weiss said none of the four, I would say, played themselves out of contention. And that's as strong as a statement as I can make. Wow. This is a great write-up of this game.
Wow.
It'll be the Junior Jabby football complex. That's where we're at with this.
That's why we've combined these two questions to wrap things up. We're wrapping it up there. We're going to be back on Thursday I don't necessarily want to say we're going to preview the spring game. Because we don't – well, when do we find out the teams? We've had some –
Thursday at some point.
It will be Thursday.
Okay. Yep.
So you won't be here, JB.
I will not get to be with you guys, but I'm excited. I'm going to embed with the staff at Troy and visit Jared Parker and a bunch of those guys and have full access to some of their coaches' meetings and practice and do a behind-the-scenes story in the next week or two for Football Scoop. So I hate to miss the sweet dulcet sounds of you all on this podcast Thursday, but I will not be here.
All right. For John Bryce and for Tim O'Malley and Pete Sampson, I'm Tim Priester, and this has been Irish Illustrated Insider.